Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone, episode 39. And my name is Kieran Tavem. And as always, I'm joined by my good friend out in Connecticut, JJ Duke. JJ, how are you, mate?
I'm good, Kieran. It's good to actually hear you that you introduced yourself this time first.
I know.
You always forget.
I do forget, but I'm not the important one. You're the man with the knowledge. I'm just the one that sets you up. But
that's debatable.
But lots to talk about. Lots to talk about on this show, to the point where we're actually having to leave stuff out. So apologies in advance. We're not going to be talking about the FAWSL. I know that was wrapped up this past weekend. We're going to do a review show in a couple of weeks. I'm actually at the FA Awards at Wembley Stadium next week, so I'll get some quotes from some of the winners, and then we'll do a roundup. The W League obviously kicked off this past weekend. Again, haven't got time to squeeze that in. We will get Anno Dong on a future show to give us a bit of a summary of what's been going on. But the things we are going to be talking about, we've got to talk about the shortlist for the FIFA Best Player in the World. It's obviously not the Ballon d'Or anymore. It is now known as the Best FIFA, or the FIFA Best Women's Player in the World. And the 10 players shortlisted have been announced. We also need to have a quick look at the UEFA Women's Champions League last 16 first legs, which have taken place this week. Some of the games are already over before the second leg has even begun. So we'll quickly round that up. There's been some moves in the NWSL, which we need to cover off. Boston Breakers in particular have been quite busy. And of course, we haven't forgotten about the Euro 2017 draw, which took place this week. We will talk about the draw itself, and we've got some reaction from some of the players that are going to be involved, which we will read out, and we will finish the show with another player who's going to be featuring in that tournament, Pernille Harder of the Danish national team. She has, of course, had another phenomenal season, winning the Swedish Damallsvenskan with Linköping. So I had a chat with her about that title win and, of course, Denmark's chances in the Euros next year. So without further ado, after a quick break, we will kick off with the FIFA Best Player in the World shortlist.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSO Zone.
So JJ, it's always a contentious subject. It always creates debate. The FIFA Best Player in the World shortlist was announced last week, and 10 names were on that list. I'm going to reel them off very quickly before we have a discussion about them. They were Camille Abelli of France, Melanie Behringer of Germany, Sarah De Brits of Germany, Amandine Henry of France, Saki Kumagai of Japan, Carly Lloyd of the United States, Jennifer Marajan of Germany, Marta of Brazil, Lotta Schelin of Sweden, and Christine Sinclair of Canada. So, when you saw that list come out, tell me what your initial reaction was.
First off, I was actually happy to see a couple of newer, maybe your new-ish names come onto the list. I mean, you know, Sarah De Brits, we haven't ever, I don't think in my memory, we've seen her name onto the short list of a best FIFA player award. So that's nice to see a little more parity, if you will. But yeah, as you said, there's always going to be some debate. I think there are a few players on this list that, if we're talking about the 10 best, maybe of a past couple of years, then yeah, sure. But of this calendar year 2016, I would have left off a couple, because, you know, we had obviously the major tournament, the Olympics, we have club competitions as well, and I think there are a few players' names that are just being carried over for their work over the past couple of years as opposed to this year. That's just my opinion when you asked about what my thought of what this list was. I still think it's a very, very strong list, and there's definitely a good amount of worthy candidates here.
Yeah, good amount of worthy candidates. I think, once again, my initial reaction was this is once again being dominated by players that have played in a major tournament. We've got 9 out of the 10 that have been shortlisted featured in the Rio Olympics. Saki Kumagai was the only one who didn't, and obviously Saki played in the UEFA Women's Champions League final and scored the winning spot kick against Wolfsburg. So I'm sure that, along with the performance that she put into that final, which was class, I was at that game in Italy, and she was the standout. And I think she got player of the match, if I remember rightly, as well. There are some players on there that I think are fortunate. I won't deny it. I'm with you. I think it's nice to see the likes of Sarah De Brits on there, young player. Had a good tournament with Germany, has had a good year with Bayern Munich. I think Melanie Behringer, now retired from the German team, of course, but still representing Bayern Munich, had a phenomenal tournament, scored lots of goals, and I think for me she was the player of the competition. I know people will talk about Marta being on there and having had her on there in previous years. They might question that. I actually thought Marta, not just for Brazil, but for Rosengard as well in the Damelsvenskan, had another good year. And I actually think that she was deserving of her position on there. I do question some of the individuals on there, but I think rather than being critical, it's not their fault. And one of the things I put up on Twitter was, if there's a player that you don't agree with, don't start slagging them off. Don't start saying they didn't do this and they didn't do that and they were rubbish. None of them are rubbish. You know, they had good years, but I don't think some of them had great years. And I'm happy to sort of say Carly Lloyd, who is a perfectionist, who won last year's award back in January, I think even she'd admit that she's not had a great year. She's had a good year, but she's not had a great year. I look at Lotte Schelin. Lotte Schelin was in and out of the Lyon team at the start of the season. I don't think she had an amazing Olympic Games, despite helping her team get to the final and helping them win a silver medal. I question a few of them, mate, but I think the biggest debate is how on earth can an awards list for best player in the world not include the best player in Europe, which was Ada Hegerberg, who won the UEFA Best Player in Europe this year, and she's not even in the final 10.
Man, I think you kind of almost answered that question for yourself, in the sense that 9 of the 10 were players that played in a major international tournament for women's football this year. For national team duty, there was just one. That was the Olympics. Now, obviously, you also answered by saying Saki Kumagai wasn't involved in the Olympics because Japan didn't qualify, but she was the player of the match in the Champions League final. You have room for 10. You can't have 10A and 10B. I'm with you, though. I'm not disagreeing, but you know, you said that you know, a lot of these tournaments, and a lot of them are, they are based on major, and I'm going to also add in another little asterisk to this, major and major European competitions, because you have nearly this entire list of players, if they don't play for European national team, they play professionally in Europe. So, you know, you have that question as well, because always UEFA Women's Champions League is one of, if not real, it is the best club competition in the world for women's football. So, yeah, no, I'm surprised that, you know, you talked about, Shailene, as well as Carly Lloyd. Yeah, I think those two probably don't deserve, not to say don't deserve, but as to say what you said, they're very good quality, if not great individuals. They just didn't have a great year. I throw Jennifer Marazan into that list as well. She's a good player. She showed up in the final of the Olympics, but that may have been all that we heard from her throughout the entire year, minus a few games here and there for club. I don't think Abeli was amazing this season. She was very good, if not great, but she might have been another one of those players that could have been substituted off for a Hegerberg. Perhaps. So, yeah, I'm with you. And I think also we don't see enough players from elsewhere. We don't have any. Well, we have Marta as a South American player, but who else from that? I think there are a couple of other candidates that are worthy. I don't think, if my memory recalls, we've ever had an African women's footballer into that competition. Hardly any players from Australia, which I think there could be a fair shout or two. So, yeah, I think there were a couple of names that were missing.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's unfortunate that we don't get players from Africa. I think it's difficult unless you are playing at a major club. I mean, Gael Anganamui, who plays for FC Rosengard, was, of course, shortlisted for the BBC Player of the Year this year. I think Christiane has had a good year with PSG and with Brazil. I thought that, I think it was Beatrice who played in the Olympics for Brazil up front. I thought she was really good as well, but I don't get to see enough of her playing domestically. I think she might play a football in South Korea. But, I, you know, it's not just Hegerberg. I know that people will say, well, you're always raving on about Hegerberg. I think, you know, this week she scored 100th goal in 75 games for Lyon. I think that speaks for itself. But it's not just her. We mentioned in the intro, we've got Pernille Harder on the show later on. Another good season in the Damelsvenskan. Again, helping her national team through to the European Championships. I might be biased, but I think Lucy Bronze as well, for both Manchester City and England, has actually become, I think, England's best player, and she's a defender. And defenders don't often get the credit that they deserve, but she has been phenomenal in 2016, following on from a really good World Cup in 2015. And I actually don't think that Carly Lloyd should necessarily be on there. As I said, I think she's had a good year. I don't think she's had a great year, but I don't even think she's been the best American player. I actually, when I put my list together, I had Tobin Heath on the list. I thought, based on how she's done for Portland and also how she's performed for the US, granted she's been in and out of the side because of the depth that they've got, she would have been the American player that I put on there if there was going to be one. But I think Pernil and Lucy Bronze and maybe one or two others are unfortunate. I agree with you. You've got the where I have the problem with the UEFA players is that you've got Jennifer Marajan and you've got Amandine Henry, who finished second and third in that UEFA Best Player Award list. So how is it that they have made it onto the list and Hegerberg hasn't? But you know, it's something that we could debate all evening, mate. I know that there were lots of comments on social media. It's just unfortunate, isn't it? Because the Ballon d'Or had such a negative kind of reputation because we saw the same names cropping up all the time with the rebranding and the fact that FIFA have gone independent with this award. It was an opportunity for it to be a little bit different. And I agree with you, we've got Sarah De Brits, we've got Melanie Behringer. Christine Sinclair had another great year for both Portland and Canada. I haven't mentioned her, and she's deserving to be on there as well. But a little bit unfortunate, I think, that there are some names that should be on there that aren't.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%. And, it's interesting because a lot of this voting actually doesn't come down to, it's not a fan voting or something along those lines. It's mostly head coaches of national teams, their peers of, current players as well. And in addition to that, a very select media is in there. I know there is a public part of it that is in addition to the voting, but a lot of the majority of the vote is people that are in the game or either playing it or covering it. So, hopefully, maybe perhaps we might see in the final three that we have, these are players that of that 2016 calendar year proved to their peers that this was their year and they should be rewarded for it. And again, as you and I both said, this is no disrespect to the other, all players that were on this list, whether we think that they had a great year or a less than great but still a very good year. Maybe hopefully the top three will be the players that we thought really were spectacular, and we hope that that the people that were watching the game enough to have that decision to go with what their gut says instead of what other people are saying.
Yeah, without a doubt, and like you said, no criticism of any of the players. In the day, they're not the ones that can influence being on there. The only way they can influence it is performances on the pitch, and none of them had a bad year. Not one of them had a bad year. I just question whether some of them had a great year. I think there were players that had a better year than some of those on the list. But congratulations to the 10. Good luck to them. And as you said, there is an element now where the fans have an opportunity. I think they make up 25% of the vote for the final three. So get on the UEFA or get on the FIFA website and start voting for your favourite player of those 10. There were, of course, 10 coaches that were named as well, but we're so pushed for time, I haven't even got time to go through them. But maybe we'll do that in the new year when we know what the final three is and we can start making some predictions. But I think we'll finish off there. I'm not going to go into a break. Let's just move on. We've talked about the kind of dominance of European-based players in the list for the FIFA award. This week was the first leg of the last 16 of the UEFA Women's Champions League. I will quickly go through the results and we can start to make some predictions. So the day of recording, Wolfsburg, who of course made the final, have gone to Sweden and beaten Eskilstuna 5-1. So you'd have to fancy them going through. Slavia Praha lost at home 3-1. To Rosengard. I can't see Praha coming back from that one. Paris Saint-Germain had a 7,500-mile round trip to Kazakhstan to play Kazakert and got the result that they needed. They won 3-0 away from home. Yesterday, Bayern Munich won 4-0 over Russian Rozyanka. Barcelona beat FC Twente 1-0 and Manchester City women take a narrow lead to Denmark after a 1-0 win over Bromby. I've left one game out deliberately, and I'll cover that one off in a minute. But when you saw the results, JJ, any surprises there? Do you think there's anyone that can maybe spring a surprise based on the results that we've seen in the first leg?
You know, all the matches that happen at the day of recording, so that's Wednesday, no, excuse me, Thursday, I don't see Kazuger, Prowler, Eskilstuna coming back and erasing those deficits just purely because they lost all those matches at home by multiple goals. Brøndby Man City now brings intrigue to me because a lot of people was following along on social media and people were saying that, well, this is the first time that we've seen City kind of blink this season, and they blinked at home. It was a Walsh goal in the final quarter of an hour or so that was the difference, but Brøndby, remember, just, what, a year or two ago, they were in the last four of this competition. There's a reason why they got there. This is a team that's kind of built to, you know, go through the Danish league with some fairly comfortable ease about it, add a few players, and then have a go at this competition. And losing 1-0 away from home is not the worst result in the world. Now you're going to have to force City to go, not to say to chase the game a little bit, but they left a lot to be desired. And I think Brøndby, what I was reading, they created a couple of chances that put a scare into the City back line. So, you know, one never knows. You know, coming off of this, or at least for some teams, you know, for City, they've already played their last match in the league for quite some time. So this is it for them. This is their final match of 2016. How much is really left in the tank as opposed to Brøndby? You know, they're right about the area where they would have their winter term off. You never know. I think that's probably the one that, if there's any team to turn it around after the first leg, that's probably it. I don't think Brescia have enough in them to beat Fortuna on the road. I don't think Twente. I mean, if that was, it wouldn't be the massive upset that we'd all think. But, yeah, I think it's Brøndby, the team that might have something in them.
Yeah, no, and sorry, I missed the Fortuna Hearing. They won 1-0 in Brescia as well, so that was a good result for them. I caught some of the Man City game, and I saw that Karen Bardsley had to make a few saves. Great goal by Kira Walsh to give them the 1-0 lead, but I spoke to a couple of journalists that were at the game, and they said City did look a little bit tired, and it's been a long season for them. You know, it's not been easy, especially with getting through to the semi-finals of the FA Cup, final of the Continental Cup, winning that, playing an 18-game season in the WSL as well, and then obviously Champions League matches. It's they don't have the biggest squad, so they have quality, but they don't have a huge amount of depth. So, be interesting to see how that one turns out. Now, the game that I left out deliberately was Lyon against FC Zurich. Now, Lyon, we know on their day, can tear apart any team in Europe. They tore apart FC Zurich because they beat them 8-0. Now, the result wasn't necessarily the major talking point because, as I mentioned earlier, Ada Hegerberg scored her 100th goal in 75 games. So she is continuing to prove why Lyon was so keen to get her over from Tabina Potsdam. Remember, she's only 21 years old as well. So depending on how long she stays there, she could be scoring a lot more goals for them. But the big talking point out of that game was Jean-Michel Aulas, the owner and president of Lyon, going on French television at half-time and once again touting American players, as he has done very publicly on his Twitter account. Now, he went on Canal Plus Sport Channel in France, and the French newspaper L'Equipe picked up some of the quotes that he got from, that he made on that half-time broadcast. And when he was asked about Alex Morgan, he said, "She's an exceptional player. It was very difficult to bring her before because the relationship with the US team was complicated, but things are changing. We try." He also hinted that one or two compatriots could be heading to France before concluding, "I can assure you that there will be an American in Lyon next season. The absence of international competition in the summer of 2018 should, in fact, make things easier." Now, he's an interesting character, Aulas. Likes to speak his mind. Doesn't really hide the fact that he's got this interest in American players. What's your perspective and what's your perception being based in America, JJ, when you see comments like that?
Well, Kieran, I'm going to give you two versions. The first would be a completely sarcastic version, but it's the sense of how he's going about it. He has no chill in going after these players. He will do whatever it takes to really get the job done. But look, I mean, this is going to almost kind of segue into what we're going to talk about in the NWSL. There's a lot of disturbing things that we're starting to hear out of this league right now. You know, ownership issues, the CBA, that's a collective bargaining agreement between the national team players and U.S. Soccer Federation, that's coming up and ending at the end of this calendar year, or at least the memorandum of understanding from the original handshake agreement that the players had with the federation. So who knows what it's going to be in store, because the original agreement was that national team players, you know, in a sense, had to kind of play in the NWSL, but that was through a certain time. You know, made it obviously easier with the league than going to national team duties, because I know when there were players playing over in the Swedish league and coming back, they said that, you know, fatigue got to them to, you know, play all these games, and then they had to take the long flight over the Atlantic to wherever the team was based, and then to train and then play the games and then go back. And, you know, their sea legs or their air legs started to hit on a few occasions. Obviously, technology has changed that a little bit, where players can adapt and react and get themselves acclimated. But, you know, I'm not going to be surprised if there is at least one big name player that will leave the American shorelines and go somewhere in Europe. Now, it may or may not be Lyon. Who knows? Because let's face it, also at the same time, this is not going to be a knock on French football, as you and I discussed before. You know, what's the point of playing in France when Lyon wins every match at least 6-0? As opposed, and then they play PSG, and then they play some competitive UEFA matches. What's the intrigue in that? As opposed to perhaps going to England or going to Sweden, where there are, you know, there's more competition there. So I don't know if it's going to be Lyon, but I think there's going to be at least one or more American player that will be leaving before the start of the NWSL season. It's going to send some wavelengths here. I'm not going to lie about that.
Yeah, definitely lots of conversations going on, lots of rumors that are floating around. You're absolutely right. And I'm interested. I'm not going to kind of go too deep into it. I want to write a piece because I've got my own opinions on it. I'm a little bit surprised that Olas has kind of got this desire to bring in American players. That's not questioning their quality, because there are plenty of quality Americans who would certainly add to that squad and certainly bring interest to the team. But I just wonder if he's maybe targeting the right players, and I'll certainly look to write something, maybe a bit of an opinion piece in the next few days, because, yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm kind of surprised and intrigued as well by the comments that he's made. I think it's a little bit naughty. I think he's putting a lot of pressure on Alex Morgan, especially with the public tweets that he's putting out. And, you know, she's obviously just keeping her head down. I haven't seen any kind of response from her or acknowledge what he's saying. But, yeah, it's an interesting one. But, yeah, it was certainly something that caught my eye yesterday, and definitely something that we'll probably keep an eye on. But you mentioned some of the movers and shakers in the NWSL, mate. We'll have a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about some of them, because there have been some high-profile moves that have taken place over the last week or two.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So, JJ, NWSL moves. The season's finished, but it's always interesting in the off-season because we see player movement. And the rumours were rife. My colleague at Equaliser Soccer, Dan Laletta, put a tweet out saying that he'd heard that Ali Krieger was likely to be traded to the Orlando Pride. He got a little bit of stick for it because we know Ali Krieger is very popular. But he was right. Ali Krieger was traded to the Orlando Pride in exchange for some draft picks. That move was both a surprise and not a surprise, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, here's the funny thing about that. When Dan put that out on social media, Ali Krieger comes out with a, you know, her online message, not only just saying, you know, in the sense of, hey, guys, I'm not going anywhere, but not everything that you hear is true. So when she said that, Spirit Faithful breathed a big collective sigh of relief. And then all of a sudden, we're hearing a lot of things that are coming out from this trade because, what, there's people saying that the Spirit never approached Allie about this. It was the Pride that ended up actually contacting her to tell her that she got traded. But the real issue here is, Kieran, and we're going to get to the other move that happened in just a few moments, there's a big domino effect that's going on right now in our nation's capital, and a lot of it is pointing to the ownership. People, players, are not happy with what Bill Lynch and the people that work around him are doing at the moment, caused by a few things, but my understanding is not only are these moves happening, but there are going to be plenty of more moves coming within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. I don't mind quoting in. I'm always happy to quote people who are actually putting it out there rather than claiming it as my own. I think it's Stephen Goff from the Washington Post actually put out, didn't he, that there is unrest in that squad. There was a team meeting that turned a little bit sour, and it would appear that there's a lot of unhappiness in that squad, and there could well be more departures. We keep hearing Crystal Dunn's name mentioned as a possible departure coming over to Europe. It would be sad, wouldn't it? You know, Mark Parsons and Jim Gabara built a really, really good team there. Well, Mark Parsons kind of built it, and Jim Gabara took it on, added a few pieces, and was able to take them to an NWSL Championship final. Within a few weeks of that final, we're talking about a team that could be decimated, could be absolutely disbanded. And come January, February, when the draft happens and before the season starts, Jim Gabara might have a big rebuilding job because we just don't know who's going to be there. And you mentioned the other move, Christine Nairn. I mean, Christine, phenomenal year once again. Big player for them since being traded from the Seattle Reign. Returns to the Seattle Reign, but also sees Madeline Schiffel, the goalkeeper who was drafted by the Spirit last year but actually played her football in Norway with Avaldsnes this year, also going to Seattle in an exchange that sees Havana Salon go to Washington and a number of draft picks. If losing Krieger was bad, losing Nairn, because of her age, because of her quality, is almost worse, mate.
No, it is, because, you know, Laura Harvey is trying to rebuild her midfield, and what better to do than to get players that you already know and players that have worked under your system before. We'll get to that when time comes, but, you know, you're saying what Stephen Goff said about these domino effects and players that were unrest after end-of-season meetings. I can tell you from speaking with individuals from years past, not just this last 2016 Washington Spirit, but 13, 14, and 15, that there has always been issues between the players and the ownership. This is nothing new, but I think in the sense of what there's been some things, obviously one would point to the whole national anthem instance with Seattle. There's a few other internal turmoil moments that happen, and that really just all kind of built together this big case that the players have against the ownership. And I almost feel bad for, you know, the coaching staff, because it's not their fault. At least that's what we think, it's not their fault. But now they're going to have to deal with basically, you know, could be upwards of half of the squad, maybe more, that are going to be departing after the season in one form or another. We could be seeing some early retirements taken. Who knows? A lot of that is speculating, but a fair bit of that as well is coming into the saying that players just don't want to be with the Spirit. And it's unfortunate, you said, for the fans. The fans, they are phenomenal supporters of that team. They show up through thick and thin. I mean, that semifinal that they hosted, it was horrific conditions out, and I think they had over 4,000 people or so to watch 120 minutes of soccer. So it's, yeah, they could be going from basically top all the way right back down to the bottom in the span of 3 months.
Yeah, and you're right. It's not the coaching staff's fault. It's not the players' fault. Jim Gabara, really classy guy, really liked, you know, the fact that we had a chance to speak to him at the NWSL Championship press conferences and came across really well and very highly respected in this league. And it's things that are potentially taken out of his hands. And you clearly know more than I do in terms of what's going on behind the scenes from what you've just said. And it would be a massive, massive shame, because it's been a bit of a long road for Washington in terms of building that team. They get to an NWSL Championship final. You think next year, potentially, they could build on that and go that one step further. And it looks like they may have to make do with a number of those high-profile players that we've already mentioned, plus possibly some more leaving as well. But don't want to focus too much on them. I certainly don't want to depress Washington Spirit fans more than they probably already are. But good pickup for Seattle in Christine Nairn. Obviously started her career in the NWSL with Seattle. I know Laura Harvey was gutted to lose her when she signed Kim Little. It was a case of having to try and give up something, or having to give up something that would entice Washington to giving up Kim's rights. And Christine was that player. She's now got her back. They've lost Kim, obviously, to Arsenal. Keelan Winters has retired. So that's a big pickup for them. But they haven't been the busiest club. The busiest club of the off-season so far, my friend, is the Boston Breakers. Of course, head coach is another Brit, Matt Beard. Struggled big time in 2016. And he is looking to revamp that squad in a big way, especially bringing in players that he knows. What do we call them now? Do we call them the Liverpool Breakers or the Boston Reds?
Boston Reds sound a lot better. I think also, you know, just the fact, look, Boston, already the Red Sox owner John Henry is already, he's been linked with Liverpool financially for years. So is it me, or is it just like, you know, starting to come full circle now that Liverpool is Boston, Boston is Liverpool, one in each other? Same thing.
Ironically, one wears red, one wears blue, so it doesn't quite work. But yeah, we could say that quite happily, more than happy to do that. I mean, if people don't know, I'm sure they do, but the reason that JJ and I are joking a little bit, obviously, when Matt came in, he signed Libby Stout, he brought in Whitney Engen, he brought in Tash Dowie during the season. He had Louise Schilgard at the start of the season. We should mention, it's actually come out today, that Louise won't be returning to the Breakers next year, which I think is a shame, but I don't think we saw the best of Louise Schilgard. The way that I put it is, I don't think Louise Schilgard reached the form of Louise Fors. Obviously, Louise Fors was her name before she got married, and I don't think we saw the best of Louise Schilgard. No doubt she has talent, but she was out of the game for 2 years when she got married and had a child. I think that was probably a little bit too long for her to come back and try and enter such a competitive league. But they've lost Schilgard, they bought in Dowie, they bought in Stout, they had Engen, and they've added Amanda DaCosta from the Chicago Red Stars in exchange for draft picks, and they've added Rosie White from Liverpool Ladies, who of course was part of the UCLA Bruins 2013 championship winning side, and she came in this week. What do you make of those two pickups, JJ?
Yeah, I think it's just more of the same. I know when I spoke to Matt this past summer, he said when he originally came to this job, he wanted players that understood his system and who could also help him not only get his feet wet here, but kind of help him, get accustomed to lifestyle and playing soccer here in the U.S. So, you know, these are two more moves that fit that bill. Amanda DaCosta, also former Boston Breaker in her own right, not in the NWSL, but in previous leagues, comes back a former player under Matt Beard, and then Rosie White, who played her college soccer here in the U.S. before taking her trade overseas and to Liverpool. So I think, you know, this is a smart move for him. I think these are players that are, as opposed to, you know, he's a man that he likes to say he likes to build through the thirds. He's not so much of a coach that enjoys playing the up and down high tempo soccer, lots of physicality that's, you know, kind of needed in this league. So you bring in players who can do a little bit of both. I think that's a smart move for him. These are just adding more pieces to the grand scheme of the puzzle, but I still don't think that they've found that player that is going to be that one, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, I see what you mean. One player it could be, though, is Emily Havi, who came in from LSK Kvinna. Some people will know them as Lillestrøm. She comes in with a lot of experience, Norwegian international, two World Cups, a European Championship under her belt. Matt's been trying to get her for a while. I've written a piece for the Equaliser website, so if people want to know a bit more about Emily, I would suggest going onto that site. Matt tried signing her twice while he was at Liverpool, and she was, I think, probably interested, but didn't probably feel it was the right time or the right opportunity. When I spoke to her, she said that she couldn't turn down Boston, and specifically she couldn't turn down the opportunity to play in the United States. I think she won't play as a striker, I don't think. I think she's more likely to play in maybe more of a wide position, but she scores goals, she's got talent. Maybe she could be that player that is the missing piece that they've been looking for.
She could be, and I think the one big factor that she has for her is she's not only so experienced, but she's young. She's not, you know, a player that's, you know, got these, you know, 6-8 years of professional football under her belt. She's only, what, 25, 26? That's not, you know, she's still probably, I would think, a few years away from her peak. And I remember watching her play both in the Euros and in previous World Cups, and I've always been impressed with her game. So, yeah, a little more speed is going to help for that team, no doubt about it. And you need to have someone who can score a few goals. So Dowie did that at the end of her slate this past season with Boston. Kaia Simon, we're still waiting for that form that we know that she could bring to the table. And with Emily, who knows? Might be that player that, you know, not the big name player, but a good name that could come in and, you know, do a little damage.
Yeah, without a doubt. She's 24, mate, so you're right, very young still. And a middle name of Bosshard. So if you've got a middle name that essentially you can split into two of Boss and Hard, you're onto a winner as far as I'm concerned. You know,
the Boston fans are going to be very happy about that. They like a good boss on the team and someone who's a real blue-collar player.
Absolutely. Well, I wish her well. I interviewed her, as I say, recently, and came across really well. So I hope she has a good season next year and certainly adjusts very, very quickly. Right, let's have a break. I think that's enough on the NWSL. We will talk more in depth on it in the next few weeks when more happens. So let's have a chat about the Euros after a quick break.
Women's Soccer Zone. It's all about the players.
So, JJ, the big event of the last few months, certainly in my eyes, took place this week with the draw for Euro 2017 next year in the Netherlands. Did you manage to watch it?
I did not. I was out, but I was able to keep an eye on my phone to see who was going where. So I'll at least give myself some credit for that.
Absolutely. Well, you know, time difference and all that doesn't make it easy, does it?
But midweeks do not make things easy.
Midweeks are middle of the day for you guys. Shall we run through the groups really quickly?
So, let's do it.
So the draw took place in Rotterdam on Tuesday. There are 16 teams, which makes it the biggest tournament ever in terms of European championships, because traditionally it has been 12 sides. So we've got a few debutants taking part in the Netherlands next year. So the four groups I will go through very quickly. In Group A, host Netherlands were automatically placed in Group A, and they were joined by Norway, Denmark and Belgium. Germany, another seed, were placed into Group B, and they were joined by Sweden, Italy and Russia. France, the seed, another seed, were placed into Group C, and they were joined by Iceland, Austria and Switzerland. And finally, the other seed were England, who went into Group D, and they will play Spain, Portugal and Scotland. So those are the four groups. The top two from each group will go through to the quarterfinals. The tournament begins on the 16th of July in Utrecht, and the first game will be between the Netherlands and Norway. The final is in Enschede on the 6th of August. Now, JJ, from my perspective, England-Scotland is without a doubt the standout, because that's what England fans wanted. That's what Scotland fans wanted. That's what we've got. Massive, massive game opening that group in Utrecht a few days after the first game in Group A. When you saw the groups come out, what was your initial reaction?
Well, first, I'm going to just one-up that match in just the first few days. Germany-Sweden matchup of the gold medal final. Anybody? No? That's just me. Look, I think, you know, if I'm the Netherlands, I'm a little bit nervous about that draw. You know, as the hosts, you kind of always hope that you have a little bit of the, not to say cruise control, but you get one tough match and then two teams that you can handle. Mate, all four of those teams are quality enough to advance. And that, you could also say the same for B. I know a lot of people are going to say, well, wait, Russia's not, they've proven that they could handle a team or two when it comes to these major tournaments. Yeah, those are kind of nervy ones for me. But I think if you are teams like Scotland, if you're a team like Iceland, I am very excited about the prospect of the groups that you have. Scotland, you have England. So do you need much more motivation than that? And then you have Portugal, who are the lowest-ranked team. And then Spain, it's always kind of a question mark. Obviously, they showed nicely in the last World Cup before just missing, but they've sometimes failed to show up in bigger matches. So, and then for Iceland, you get to open against France, and then you play Austria and Switzerland. That's actually in reverse order of their actual matches, but... I'm liking those draws as opposed to the Dutch and anybody in Group B.
I think the big thing for me, and I was discussing it with a few journalists after the draw came out, with the World Cup, occasionally you see some very one-sided affairs. We saw Germany hammer the Ivory Coast at the World Cup last year, didn't we? There are a few big scores. The Euros, you very rarely get that. I mean, when I look at this group, these groups... I actually put out there which one is the group of death. And when I look at it, mate, I can't really pick one. You know, I guess having had a little bit of time to digest it, maybe Group A, I think you're right. The Netherlands as hosts will want to do well. But when you've got Norway, Belgium and Denmark, they're all competent sides. They're all really, really competent sides. You know, you think that you've got the quality forward line of Norway, which we've mentioned on countless occasions. The Danes have Pernille Harder, who we're going to speak to shortly, and Nadia Nadim, and Belgium have some good players as well, Janis Kaiman and Tessa Vullaert. That is not an easy group in the slightest, and I think that one could potentially be the banana skin for the host nation, possibly. I think, as we've said, Group D, England and Scotland is a massive standout, but Portugal-Spain is a derby match as well, you know, so they will be... certainly up for that one. England, of course, beat Spain recently 2-1 in Guadalajara. I think it's going to be fascinating, mate. I can't wait. I think it's going to be really exciting. I think the Euros could potentially top the World Cup last year.
You're not wrong. And I think, honestly, almost the first match day of each group might be not only the best days to watch, but that might be the determining factor. Because look at it. So you go through each group. Group A, Netherlands, Norway to open things up. And then you have the Danes against Belgium. You'd think that if you're Denmark, you want to get a very strong result out of that because that might help you carry you through. Then in Group B, you have Italy, Russia, and Germany, Sweden. I already spoke about the latter. But the former, you know, that's a big for either one of those teams in terms of potential goal difference or just getting 3 points in general. You have France playing Iceland. Wouldn't that be a statement right there of Iceland already backing on a nation in the sense for the first the men have had, you know, such recently good success. And the women's team, they're right on the cusp of doing something special in their own right. That's going to be big. And then also Austria and Switzerland, another, you know, good quality match. And like you said, the two local derbies in Group D. I think if whoever is the victors out of each of those first match day matches, that might be the ones that will be informed throughout the rest of the tournament.
Yeah, tell you what, when we go through it, it's flipping exciting, isn't it? I can't wait. I think it's going to be amazing. I can't wait to get out there. I think you're right. We had Freyr Alexandersson, the Iceland head coach, on the show a few weeks ago, didn't we? And he was talking about how, you know, the Iceland team have developed and how they have that coordinated approach with the men's team. And I think they could be really exciting this year, Iceland. And Switzerland, believe it or not, are making their debut. We know about some of the quality players that they've got. And I think there could be some surprises. And actually, I went on Jen Cooper's podcast, The Mix Zone, recently, and she asked me the question, can anyone actually beat Germany? Because they've actually dominated the last few European championships. And I think they can, mate. I think this one could be the tournament where Germany potentially don't win it.
Yeah, I mean, look, the last Euros, I could almost kind of say, because we had that first real instance, I don't know what your thoughts about it, but the teams almost really kind of canceled each other out. There's not a whole lot of scoring. We had the ranking of third place teams go to Lotz, We had Iceland got through, and I'm looking up right now, Denmark and Russia ended up having to go to basically a coin flip to see who's going to be the final quarterfinal team. I mean, that just shows how tight it was. We had, of course, that penalty kick shootout between France and Denmark, which the Danes won. And then you had Norway over the Danes in PKs. The one thing that stood out for Germany is they just didn't allow goals, plain and simple. That was the group where basically everything was 1-0, 1-0, 1-1. But then the knockout stages, Germany tossing a shutout against Italy, Sweden, and Norway. That's basically the death trap of European football. That was defense 2009, a little bit too early for me, but just looking through it quickly, there's a bit more scoring in that tournament. But I think because of how the transitional phase is still going for Germany right now, as they had a few of their key players retired, they're bringing in a lot of youngsters. The youngsters did well in 2013, but I think you're right. I think there's going to be a team out there that's going to peak at the right time and beat Germany.
Yeah. Early days, of course, it's difficult to predict with squads, and we don't know who's going to be selected for each team. What their injuries are very unfortunate in the lead up to competitions, but you would be surprised if some teams weren't missing the odd player here and there that would have been key. So, really, really difficult. But I'm excited, mate. Bigger tournament, but I don't think it makes it any weaker. I think we saw with the men's tournament.
I think you're right.
I think it is going to be stronger. We're not going to have situations where teams can't win games either. You mentioned Denmark in 2013 getting through to the semi-finals. They actually got a lot of stick, mate, because they didn't actually win a game in normal time during the whole competition.
Yep.
They got through to the semi-finals not winning a game in 90 minutes.
Yep.
So but you won't be able to do that. I think you have to at least win one game in that group stage to progress. I don't think you can finish runner-up, or certainly you won't be able to finish top. But I don't think you can finish runner-up not winning a game in that competition. So I'm with you. I think it's going to be stronger. I think it's going to be exciting. I can't wait. I really, really can't wait. I think it's going to be a top tournament. Now, we're going to speak to Pernil Harder in a minute about her thoughts on the draw and as I said, about winning the Swedish Damallsvenskan. I wanted to try and get some response from players that are going to be involved in the competition. So I threw a few messages out to players that I've interviewed and players that have been on this show. And I got about half a dozen back from players from different countries, which in the case of having only done this 24 hours before, I wasn't expecting to get that many. So you and I have got a few each. So if we rotate, mate, and just say who the player is, which country they represent, and what they said in response to the draw, I just give a little bit of insight. We can give our opinions, but I think it's always important to get the players. I would have liked really to have recorded them giving their view, but with the short turnaround, it was very, very difficult. So they sent me a quick message. We'll read out the ones that we got back. So if you want to fire off, mate.
First, Veronica Boquet, who plays for Spain. This is going to be their team's third participation in the Euros. They finished as quarterfinalists in the last championships and also still got to the World Cup for the first time last year. She told us that for us as Spain, it was a good draw because we have rivals who we can compete with. That's obviously being England, Scotland, and Portugal. We respect them all, but we are not afraid of anyone. We played recently versus all of them, and that is good. Everything is fresh. So obviously she's enjoying what the road kind of lies ahead for her side.
Okay.
At least, you know, again, starting off with Portugal.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, I got a message back from Janice Kaiman, who obviously represents Belgium. They're making their debut in the competition there in Group A, as we mentioned, with Norway, Holland and Denmark. And she said, very shortly, our group is an interesting group where every team has their fair chance to create their own future in the tournament.
Interesting. Next one, Rachel Corsi for Scotland. First time that Scotland is going to be competing in a major tournament for women's football. She's incredibly excited. Now the draw that has been made, it's definitely the added motivation to really step it up on the training pitch.
Yeah, I've spoken to Rach a little bit, and I know that the Scottish team are, well, they can't wait. And I'm sure that with the England game, they can't even wait even more now. So, yeah, interesting one. Definitely an interesting one. Well, I might as well skip to Rachel Daly, because obviously England are in Scotland's group. They got to the final in 2009, losing to Germany. didn't have the best tournament in 2013, got knocked out in the group stages, which resulted in Hope Powell losing her job. So Rach said, I watched the draw live, really excited for a good rivalry game against Scotland. It's one of the most difficult groups there. It's one of the most difficult groups there, but I'm confident we will progress as winners of the group. So Rach, certainly confident, despite the fact she's still relatively new to international football, definitely confident going into that tournament. Who you got next, mate?
Well, to kind of go on that, when do we ever not talk about Rachel Daly and being confident? It's always Rachel Daly is probably one of the most confident people and footballers that I know. I have Dagny Brynja's daughter next. Obviously, Iceland now their third straight year participating in Euros. They got to the quarters in 2013. When you asked all these players to try and put this into perspective in one sentence, she said one sentence, that's tough. So she went for two sentences. It's a tough group, but at the stage, every single game will be hard. We are really looking forward for this challenge, and we are ready to show the world how good we are. And like we've already said, we know that this is a team in Iceland they are right on the edge of going into that upper level of, you know, forces to be reckoned with in women's football.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I forgot to point that out. I did actually ask the players when they responded so that we weren't speaking for ages to sum up their feelings on the groups in one sentence. So some of them are shorter than others. I've got two more, mate, and that was the lot. So I got Nilla Fischer, obviously representing Sweden. They were the hosts in 2013, got to the semi-finals, but were knocked out by Germany. They will have Germany again in their group this time round. Obviously played them in the Olympic final in Rio. And she said, I think we got a good group. And that's good that the first game is against Germany. So she's looking forward to that game in particular. And I'll finish off with the current holders. I managed to get a message this morning from Anya Mittag. And she said, I think we got a tough group, especially when you think about Sweden. To meet the Olympic finalists at our first game at the Euros again is definitely crazy, and I would say our strongest opponent in the group. But even Italy and Russia are teams not easy to play against. Italy with their strong and aggressive play, and Russia could also surprise. So that's some of the response from players who sent messages. I did fire out a few other messages to others, but as I said, because of the quick turnaround, we didn't get responses from everyone. So apologies if your country hasn't been featured, but maybe we'll try and get a bit of response over the coming months before the tournament takes place. But as I mentioned, one of the players that we managed to speak to in person, well, not in person, but we spoke to her on Skype, was Pernille Harder from Denmark. Wanted to speak to her about the Euro draw and, of course, the fact that she won a bit of a surprising title with Linköping beating Rosengard to the Damallsvenskan this year. So, managed to speak to her this week. So, here is Pernille. Okay, so her third appearance on Women's Soccer Zone. It's always a pleasure to have a player of Pernille Harder's quality and calibre. Of course, a great year for her once again, winning a Swedish title with Linköping, and of course has a Euro 2017 competition to look forward to next year. Pernille, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
So, let's dive right in, shall we? Because it's been an interesting 2016 for you, which was probably highlighted by a league title win for Linköping, when the whole season undefeated, scored 23 goals, which was the most in the league. So a good year for you. Sum it up as best you can.
Yeah, it has been really good. It has been an amazing season. No loss, just winning. It's no worries. It has just been so good, and we have played really good as well. I have made a lot of goals, but I think the whole team has played really, really good. It has been a successful year for me and the whole team.
What's been the kind of secret, or what was the secret to Linköping being able to overcome a really, really strong team in Rosengård? We know about the quality that they have in the likes of Marta, and obviously they signed Lotte Schellinger in the season as well. What was it that got you guys over the line and made sure that you won the title ahead of them?
I think it's because we have been so we have been good in every game. Last year we lost some games that we should win, So we won all the games, and also when we played against Rosengård, it was equal games, matches. But the first one was 1-1, and then we won the last one, and it's very important that that we won against Rosengård also to win the title. But I think the most important thing is that we have been, we have had a high level. When we play bad, we play good. So
you do enough. You do enough to win, even when you're not playing particularly well, I guess, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay. No, that's great. I mean, I said there the squad that Rosengård have, but your squad has come under the spotlight as well this season, not necessarily because you have what you would describe as star names across the world, but there were players this year that really stepped up, the likes of Stina Blackstenius and Fridolina Rolfo, who young players like yourself who've really kind of made their mark. How important has it been blending in young players and all kind of being able to understand each other's game?
Yeah, it has. It is a young team, and a lot of us has played together for 3 years, I think. It's upcoming stars, I think, in our team, and the names you said, but also a player like Christina Minde. She had played very good this year and made a lot of goals as well and assists. And in the back line, we have a lot of young Swedish players. Three of them was in the Olympics. And then Claudia Neto. It's not a player that make a lot of goals or assists, but she's a really good midfielder. Really good. So, I think also that, we have played 3 years together and developed the team a lot.
Certainly a lot of players in that side have stepped up. It was just a couple that come into my head initially, but a big season for you on a personal level as well. Your name is starting to, or has been out there for quite some time. Top scorer again in the league. What's been the key to you getting better and better and better as the seasons go on?
Yeah, I don't really know. I just, I'm never getting satisfied. I want to be better all the time. So when I got a good season last year, I wanted to do it better this year. And I knew that it would be difficult because it was a good year for me last year. I just practicing hard and doing my best all the time. So I think that's the key.
And how big was the motivation to do well this season? Obviously missed out on the UEFA Women's Champions League. You've seen Rosengård and Eskilstuna get through to the last 16 so far. Eskilstuna obviously have a big job, losing 5-1 to Wolfsburg this week. But how, having had that experience of the Champions League and not being in it this year, how big was the motivation knowing that a top two finish would get you back in next season?
Yeah, of course it was a big motivation. Also that we ended up pretty bad last season in the table. So this year we really wanted to be in top two, and it felt good in the preseason with the friendly matches and so. So before we were starting with the season, it felt like we're going to win this year.
I'll talk about Denmark in a minute, because you've got a really exciting 2017 coming up after qualifying for the Euros. I've spoken on this show, and people will have heard me speak on this show a little bit earlier, about the FIFA Women's Best Player of the Year. And it's obviously a slightly different award because it used to be known as the Women's Ballon d'Or. It's an independent award now. There were 10 players announced in the last week or two, and I've been very public about some of the players that should have been on there. One of the names that I think should have been on there is yourself, and I do think that the award loses a little bit of credibility when players like yourself and Edda Hegerberg, who are scoring lots of goals but also doing lots of things to help their team win titles, are not on that list. I'm not looking for you to criticise anyone, but were you in any way sort of thinking you might make that list, and what was your reaction when you saw the 10 names on there?
No, I didn't think I would be on the list because, we haven't played Champions League and I haven't been in some with the national team, the Olympics. So it was just my performance in the Damallsvenskan, and I knew that even though how good I'll be in the Damallsvenskan, it's not enough to come on that list. But I was really surprised that Ada Hegerberg wasn't on the list. The best in Europe, and she has been really good. So that was a big surprise for me.
Do you think, though, that maybe domestic football should be taken a little bit more notice of? You've got a really strong competition in Sweden with some good sides. You finished top scorer in the league. Should domestic football be a little bit more recognised when deciding the names for these rewards?
It's difficult to answer. Of course, it's also important to perform in the national team, but it's not easy always to come to these big tournaments. The performance in the clubs is also very important. But to be seen, it seems like you also have to be playing some kind in Europe. But I think it should be enough just to play Champions League. And therefore, I think it's weird that Ada Hegerberg isn't on the list.
Okay. All right. Well, we won't dwell on that too much because I know it's not an easy subject. But Denmark, the European Championship draw took place in Rotterdam this week. And Denmark have, I think, a really exciting group in Group A alongside the host Netherlands. You faced Norway and you faced Belgium as well. What was your reaction when you saw the draw come out, Pernille?
It's good. It's a really equal group, I think. All four teams. It's going to be really exciting. Of course, if we had got Germany or France, it would have been more difficult because they are so dominating. But this group, it seems really equal. It can be all four teams who can win the group, I think.
And you open the competition against Belgium. They are making their first appearance in a European Championships. That'll be an interesting game, won't it? Because you know they will want to impress, making their debut in the competition.
I think they have been developed a lot the last years, and we also played them in Algarve, but they did well. They did good. So it's going to be exciting.
And a game against Norway and the Netherlands, the hosts. Obviously, you got to the semi-finals last year. Norway get through to the final. They knocked you out in the semi-finals last year. An opportunity to get a little bit of revenge, Pernille.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully, we'll get the revenge.
But it's a bigger tournament now, isn't it? In terms of there being 16 teams, the top two will now have to go through. It's a little bit harder, isn't it? Because 2013 and previous tournaments, you could finish third place and you could still go through. How much harder does it make it now that only two teams will go through from each group?
Of course, it's harder. Two teams now, not three. It's different from last time. I think it's good. Also, when the drawing was, it was not easy to say which group you wanted to be in because all the teams is good teams, and it just show how the women's football has developed the last years.
From where the team was 4 years ago to where it is, or certainly 3 years ago to where it will be, or where you think it is now. How much better are you? How much of a chance do you think you've got? Not necessarily to win it, but to make an impression at that competition.
It's difficult to say. The last European we have, there was a lot of players who stopped their career after that. So we have had a younger team since that, and we have been developed a lot, and we did well, really well in the last in the qualifying. We'll see. I hope we can do well.
And for you, 2017, a big year, lots to look forward to the Euros, another Damallsvenskan title to defend, UEFA Women's Champions League to look forward to next year. How big is 2017 for Pernille Harder?
It's very important. I'm looking really, really forward to it. And especially the European. It's going to be very good.
Women's Soccer Zone. It's all about the players.
So that was Pernille Harder giving us some insight into her thoughts on the Euro draw and the title win with Linköping. And I think, JJ, probably a good time to wrap it up. Looking at the clock, we've been on for a while, but a lot to pack in. Mate, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this show. Lots to talk about.
Absolutely. It's been a blast.
Good man. Good man. And thank you, listeners. Always appreciate your time. Always appreciate your feedback as and when you want to give it. If you want to do that, you can follow us on Twitter. We're on @WosoZone. Email us at wosozone@gmail.com. To listen to the show, you can do so in two ways. We're on iTunes, or you can listen to us on audioboom.com/channel/wosozone. We'll be back in a couple of weeks for a roundup on the FAWSL season, and JJ and myself will follow that up with the next full episode. So until then, take care of yourselves, and bye-bye.